Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us only sky. Imagine all the people living for today.
Welcome. It's Anne Wilson here, and it is my pleasure to host Emerge Australia's podcast series for 2026, brought to you during ME Awareness Week. I acknowledge the traditional custodians of country and their connections to land, sea, and community, and I pay my respect to elders past and present, and those listening to this podcast, noting your continuing contributions, struggles, and achievements. When I consider the times in which we live, the lyrics of John Lennon's Imagine seem to resonate with what I'm sure we all wish for, and that's a world without war, a world without stigma or discrimination, a world where we have equity of access to healthcare, treatments, clinical services, and cures. The lyrics that John Lennon wrote way back in 1971 are as relevant today as they were then. And one would wish that we would have moved on a bit, but we haven't. In this series, designed to focus on post-exertional malaise, or PEM, our key theme for World ME Awareness Week, I'm delighted to interview people with ME-CFS to share their lived experience of PEM and the hidden harm of trying harder. This podcast may include discussions on sensitive topics, including mental health and other health-related information. Some listeners may find this content confronting, triggering, or challenging. The information shared is intended for general informational purposes only and is not a substitute for professional medical advice, so listener discretion is advised. Well, with that introduction, I'm delighted to tell you about today's guest, Carolyn Merritt. Welcome, Carolyn.
Hi, Anne.
Carolyn is a respected, experienced physiotherapist with a remarkable career spanning four decades. Carolyn's expertise and insights are invaluable to our community. Having dedicated her life to helping others, Carolyn's own health journey has given her a unique perspective of chronic illnesses, particularly dysautonomia and ME-CFS. Her early retirement due to health issues has not diminished her passion for raising awareness and improving the understanding of these complex conditions. So please join us as we delve into Carolyn's story, her experiences as a healthcare practitioner, and her journey towards advocating for better knowledge and care for those living with chronic illnesses. This is a must-listen episode for anyone interested in the intersection of healthcare and patient advocacy. With that introduction, welcome, Carolyn. Delighted to have you with us today.
Thanks very much, Anne.
So let's just kick off with you telling us a little bit about yourself, your personal story, your professional life.
Yeah, sure. As you said, I was a physiotherapist for 40 years. I went straight from school into uni and I loved being a physio right from the start. It's been a great career and I've really enjoyed it. I've worked in a good variety of settings, started off in the public hospital system, went into the private hospital system, and then a couple of private practices that I ran, and then working for others. So I feel like I've had quite a nice broad exposure And I'm also a mother of four. They're adult children now, but that just threw four boys in there to keep me busy.
Oh, so that's a change.
Including twins. So that kept me busy. So I've been busy most of my life. And I think pretty early on I was drawn to not necessarily acute sporting injuries, more interested in people with sort of ongoing conditions, chronic health stuff, back and neck pain, a lot of stuff like that. And also I've always been really fascinated by the psychology of how patients process what's going on with them, how other people process things. And, you know, that's always interested me as well. And I'm one of those people that just a lifelong learner. Like, you know, I think when you are a healthcare professional, you never stop learning. You always learn and you can never know it all. And it's probably one of the things I've loved about being a physio is just that's always learning and that helping people. And when you put together what's going on for them and find solutions and management strategies, it's just been incredibly rewarding.
Yeah. It is about putting the pieces of the puzzle together, isn't it? Because sometimes a patient or we as patients present with a particular problem, presenting problem. But as you get to know the patient, you get to understand about the other dimensions of their lives. And that's where the clinician can start putting the pieces of the puzzle together and start better understanding maybe causation or better understanding how to help this person. So I think that's a really important point to remember, and really lovely to know for our listeners that that's the kind of thought process that goes through the minds of most clinicians, I think, trying to help their patient. So with your extensive experience as a physio, what have you learned about post-exertional malaise and ME/CFS? And are you able to share some insights into the unique challenges around these, both for patients and the healthcare providers?
Yeah, big question, big question.
You can divide.
I think. How long has he got? Yeah, Pem, there's just so much to say about that. I mean, for a start, so many people have never heard of it. They don't know what it is. And then I think there's people who have heard of it and think they know something about it that really don't. And that was probably me. I thought I knew a bit about PEM. And when I first got sick, I was on the lookout for it, or so I thought. I was terrified that that would be what was wrong with me. My first diagnosis was actually POTS dysautonomia. But what I learnt when I started to experience PEM is that it's just a totally much more complicated. I wish I could remember what I actually thought it was, but I think that I mostly thought that it was rebound fatigue. And I don't think that I really understood the complexity of how delayed it could be and how sneaky it could be and how cumulative it could be, and that you could have it without knowing, and the symptoms and the triggers. You know, it wasn't until I completely crashed that I realized that the build up to that, you know, that I probably had I had cumulative PEM sneaking up on me that I didn't realize. And, you know, that's probably one of the things, if we're thinking about how do we raise awareness for clinicians, is that it sometimes isn't very obvious, particularly in the early stages. It took, like I said, it took a massive crash for us to go, okay, this is what's going on here now. I've sort of jumped around there a bit.
It's a pretty unique challenge when you've got a symptom that just sort of sneaks up on you and you never quite know when it's, you know, how bad it's going to be. a lot of other people that I've interviewed have talked about the fact that it often takes several days to appear. It's not as if you exert yourself or do something that is extremely taxing on your energy and then immediately you go into PEM. Some people go into PEM 2 or 3 months later and they weren't expecting it.
No, and I think that is the big thing that I think physios are really good people to be aware of this, because we're primary care practitioners and we, you know, if you're treating sort of more chronic patients, you're tending to spend a bit of time with them, because this stuff doesn't come out necessarily in the first 5 minutes if the patients aren't really aware of it. So one of the things, and we might sort of talk about that more as physio, but, you know, even when I was on the lookout for it, I missed it. So, you know, in my case, and I'm a bit different, I'm a bit of an outlier, because this hit me in later life and I was really well and I had major surgery. I had both my knees replaced at the same time. And I walked in kind of normal and I've never been normally healthy again through no fault of the surgeon. The surgery was very successful, but it triggered a massive dysautonomia, POTS. And at some point along the way, PEM snuck in there. I think it really was just dysautonomia POTS to start with. And I had a couple of viruses, COVID and shingles in 2022. And my feeling is that it was after that my response to exercise changed. But it was sneaky because I was already so unwell and I already had fatigue and symptoms with the POTS. So it wasn't blindingly obvious when things started to change. It was sort of this hunch. And it wasn't until I sort of really pushed myself on a holiday and did, you know, I did a hike and all these things I was so proud of, because I was told to exercise. I was told you couldn't make yourself worse. And I just pushed through and then I absolutely crashed. And don't recommend that as a way of finding out, but it did make it all very clear.
Yeah.
And, you know, now I've learned a lot about not getting back into a situation like that if I can help it.
Yeah. So how has your personal experience shaped your perspective as a clinician in regard to patient care and advocacy?
Well, I like to think that I've always used my experiences to, I'm a person that tends to deep dive into experiences and try to really learn from them and use that knowledge to make me a better physio. So my first experience of grief, you know, made me a better physio. When I had surgery originally as a young physio, I went, oh, okay, this is what my patients are talking about. So whenever I've suffered any sort of thing, I've tried to learn from it. And I like to analyze and deep dive into how it feels and use that to make me have more empathy and be more understanding. I like to think I was already had a lot of empathy as a physio, but this has really been challenging. I think just that unrelenting nature. I mean, when you're a parent, you know about unrelenting and never getting a break, but this is, you know, when your health is 100% sort of something that you have to keep at the back of your mind or at the front of your mind the whole time. It's very draining and unrelenting. And again, I feel I am a bit of an outlier. Because I became sick from such a specific event and at a later time in life, I haven't experienced the gaslighting and a lot of the issues that people experience. And I guess, you know, I really want to acknowledge that there are people with terrible experiences and I'm so grateful I have an incredibly supportive family. No one has accused me of faking it. My doctor didn't think I was faking it either. You know, they didn't know what it was. But so, you know, I haven't had to deal with a lot of issues that other people have, but I certainly have patients that have dealt with gaslighting and been misdiagnosed as anxiety and non-supportive family.
You say to those doctors who don't believe you?
Well, I'm not aware of any doctor not believing, but I do remember really clearly after the surgery when I was still so sick, sort of, I can't remember, 3 months later, my orthopedic surgeon said, I'm sending you off to the general physician. And I can remember at the time thinking, oh my God, I hope they're not going to tell me that this is anxiety, because I know it isn't. But I could tell that there were some similarities in the way it presents. But thankfully, he didn't. He didn't know what it was, but he didn't. I felt like I was believed. I haven't really necessarily experienced doctors not believe me. I've certainly experienced doctors say, what's that? Or, you know, like say nothing, which usually I think means they don't really know what you're talking about. You know, I think that one of the things as health practitioners is that we just have to maintain our humility. You can never know everything. You never can. And new research and new knowledge keeps coming, and we can learn a lot from patients if we actually listen to them. I mean, who in their right mind would fake this illness? I mean, if you're going to fake something, wouldn't you choose something that everybody has some awareness of? I just can't understand why anybody would think that anybody would want to fake or not be believed in this. It doesn't make any sense to me. But again, I'm really lucky. No one would say, oh, Carolyn Merrick, she's really lazy. I mean, I was in my 50s and I was a busy mother of four with working. Nobody would associate me with not, you know, I was efficient and I was doing stuff. So I didn't have to sort of go through what some of the young ones, you know, go through. And I feel for them greatly.
Have you felt at any stage that, because you're a health professional, an allied health professional, that your GP, for example, or your diagnosing clinician in some way listens more than he would otherwise listen if you weren't a health professional?
I absolutely think that's been a factor. My GP, I think she's probably wonderful with everyone, but she's fantastic and she's really respectful of my knowledge and really happy if I go in there and say, what do you think about trying this and, you know, that. So I'm pretty sure she's lovely to everybody, but I think being a clinician does get some extra respect.
It helps, I think. And so that sort of takes me down the track of thinking the more knowledge that patients can arm themselves with, especially given that we've got a lot of clinicians who don't know an awful lot about ME/CFS, let alone PEM. So the more information that patients can feel confident about presenting to their general practitioner, the more successful their interaction will be. I mean, and we do a lot of both clinical education and education for the general public. Do you see that empowerment of the patient is something that really helps to bring about a better mutual understanding between patient and doctor?
I think it's really important, but it isn't always received well from what I hear. So, and I think that we need to have a balance. So, like I said, you know, there has to be some humility and some desire to learn and to understand that patients have so much they can teach us in this area. And, you know, like everything I learnt about PEM didn't come from a doctor, you know, not even a textbook. I mean, my learnings came from other patients, really, to start with, other patients getting on the Facebook support pages and people explaining what it is. I remember asking the question, can PEM be cumulative? Because I think that's what's happened to me. And people saying, yeah, it can, you know, because that wasn't in my knowledge of what PEM was prior.
I totally understand. Our medical director, Dr. Richard Schloeffel, at the end of his clinical presentations to GPs, he always made the statement that everything he knows, he's learnt from his patients.
Yes, yes. And so, yes, I think we have to take away the stigma, you know, the memes and patients Googling. And you know, there's a balance there because patients do learn a lot about their bodies and their symptoms. And, you know, we're up against the society has this glorification of pushing through, soldiering on, which is really an exercise. I mean, I'm a physio. I've given exercise as part of the treatment my whole life. You know, I hope I've given it carefully and I've certainly counseled patients about, you know, needing to, you know, vary their exercise. Early on with a lot of rheumatoid arthritis patients, you know, it's not linear, but it's really hard to, society thinks exercise is healthy and the best thing to do. And it's really hard to get the message through that, yeah, that's true for lots and lots of things, but it's not necessarily true for everything. And it's definitely not true here.
One size fits all either. You can't say, you know, everybody has to exercise more, etc., because as we know, people with ME/CFS can't do that. And whilst a degree of physical activity is important, it has to be looked at within the context of the person's energy envelope and what they are capable of doing, because, you know, they land straight back in PIM and more importantly, they crash, which is dangerous because
yeah,
last a long time, and then people lose all of their energy capacity as a result of having, you know, overdone it in one area that, you know, probably shouldn't have occurred.
Yeah, you've just reminded me. That was another thing I didn't know as a physio. When I thought I knew about PEM, I thought it was rebound fatigue. I didn't know that it was dangerous necessarily, you know. So I think that's an important learning.
Yeah. And that's been something that it's taken the ME/CFS community years and years to get across. And those messages are finally sinking in. But, you know, it's really a tragedy that it's taken so long for people to realize that such things as graded exercise therapy are actually harmful to people who've got ME/CFS. And I'm really pleased to hear that that's now being openly stated by people right across the board. Can I ask you, from an advocate's perspective, you will have encountered the usual barriers and challenges in your own efforts to raise awareness. What are some of the most significant obstacles you've faced? And tell us a little bit about how you've navigated these.
I have found it much harder to advocate when it's kind of something that affects me. So and that's because of sort of self-consciousness and stuff. So, you know, when my son was dyslexic, I went bang, right in there, became a dyslexia advocate. But when it's around dysautonomia and PEM and me, ME, I've had that self-consciousness that I've had to kind of deal with, you know, am I trying to get sympathy? Poor me. You know, there are people worse off than me, you know, and it's quite difficult. And I've spent my life telling patients to, you know, accept help and do things, but I've found it really hard. The first time I got a wheelchair at the airport, I just was so self-conscious.
Would have been
and embarrassed.
I think,
and I think, like, to be perfectly honest, you know, there's a feeling of embarrassment that your body isn't working properly. You feel like you should be able to not have a body that doesn't work properly. So, you know, and I find it really fascinating because I know intellectually that all of that is wrong, but I've found that's been one of the biggest barriers. I'm self-conscious about speaking up in case people misjudge it. So that's just tricky. It's an ongoing thing.
Yeah. But that brings me to the issues around stigma, discrimination, shame, it sounds to me from what you've just said that all of those things are things that you have experienced both as a patient and as a clinician.
Yes. And again, you know, I was in my 50s, confident. I'd had a career. I was financially stable. We'd paid off our house, and I still struggled with this. And you think about 15-year-old girls or young people that haven't worked, and my heart sort of just bleeds for them because that's just like so much harder again. And again, like I'm well enough to talk to you today. And while we're doing this, there are people in dark rooms who couldn't possibly talk to you for an hour. So I'm sort of very aware of that. I think that often we're really hardwired to fight things. I am. I was hardwired to fight when there was something with my kid. I'm there. I'm learning. I'm learning all about this, and I'm advocating and I'm fighting. And when it comes to dealing with PEM as a patient and ME as a patient, that hardwired fight, you've got to actually completely reframe the way you live. And that's slow. I think that's probably another thing, is even someone like myself with really strong clinical reasoning skills, it's not quick that you master learning what the subtle signs in your body are, trying to learn ahead of time the little clues so that you can try to prevent the crashes. I'm big on heart rate variability and learning all of that data, but all of that takes time. It's taken a few years to learn.
And having the right way to measure it. And, you know, it's not just, you know, it's one thing to be knowledgeable, but another thing to then persevere on a daily basis and measure it so you know exactly where you're at.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of trial and error with this. You learn that when I feel like this, I can't trust this feeling, because if I push through now, I'll get PEM. But, you know, I think you've got to be so self-disciplined to actually handle trying to avoid PEM and to live like this. And again, you've got to be privileged. If you don't have support, it's pretty hard to do what you have to do to manage this condition properly.
I don't think
people understand that.
I would think it is very difficult. You know, like, I mean, for most people, self-discipline doesn't come easy anyway, whether it's, you know, you're disciplined about what you eat, what you drink, you know, anything. It's always a challenge. You're always tempted to either not do something or do something you should be doing. So I think self-discipline is a really big issue. I also think that being open to changing lifestyle habits is confronting for many people, you know?
Yeah.
Looking at what they're eating, because that's one area that we haven't delved into as much as we're going to, and that is the impact of diet on psychosocial health and general well-being, you know? It's what you put into your system will determine what you are able to do with all of the energy that you're eating. So that's an area also for us that, you know, we're keen to explore.
Right.
How important is that self-discipline to you personally?
So when I'm talking about self-discipline, I guess I'm talking about pacing. When I'm talking about that tuning into your body, and sometimes the message it tells you is not, you can't do that thing you want to do, and then the discipline to not do it, the discipline for, well, I want to do something in 2 days' time, so even though I don't feel too bad, I know I have to try and rest and sort of bank up some energy and then rest after.
It sounds as though it's something you really have to plan out, don't you? If you've got an event coming up, then you need to say every day I need to rest this amount of time because I'm banking hours that I will need on such and such a date. Is that the way it works?
Yeah. Sort of, but it's actually far more complicated than that because it's not a lovely recipe. I think patients would love a recipe. People love recipes. They want instructions. Well, this is what you do, and then you get that. And the world thinks, and I think the wellness myth and the way the world, well, that's what people want to think. If we do this, you get that. But the body doesn't necessarily work like that. And I think that's another thing about this. It's not linear. When you look at things like osteoarthritis, even when it's severe, you've got kind of, okay, if I walk for too much, my knees are going to be more sore. And it's kind of, there's a linear correlation and there's an expectation and there's a recovery time. And you get a fracture, you've got this kind of, okay, it might take this long to heal and there's that recovery time. And this is not linear and it's not the same. And you might be able to do something this day, but another day, you might be trying to do the same thing, but it might be in a more noisy environment or it's hotter or you didn't sleep as well. And, you know, all of those things impact on it. So there's no way to know for sure whether you're going to be all right and you've just got to sort of work around it. And ultimately, that's kind of why I stopped work. I mean, I kept reducing my hours and finally I was only doing like 2.5 hours. I was just doing my favorite Pilates patients. But, you know, I knew that if I didn't have any firm commitments to sort of let people, that I could respond to the way my body was going and then I would probably be able to stay more stable.
Yeah. What advice, Carolyn, would you give to the healthcare professionals who are looking to improve their understanding and care for patients with PEM and ME/CFS? Have there been any sort of specific resources or strategies that you've found have helped you that have enhanced your practice and therefore might be helpful for others?
Yeah, well, I definitely think that if people want to learn, they need to be referring to sort of evidence-based guidelines, places like Emerge, and get good information. There's a lot of misinformation out there. So it's fantastic to have an organization such as Emerge with so much information on it. And I think, you know, if you want to learn about this, it's a commitment. You can't just like, you're not going to learn that much just like in a half hour lecture. You know, it's complicated. You've got to learn and then you've got to learn from your patients and it takes time. And then if you want to explore things, some of the tools like heart rate, variability, pacing, things, you know, that takes ages. You know, I think my clinical reasoning skills meant that I picked up that a lot faster, but it still takes ages to correlate and learn. Yeah. So it's a commitment. If you want to learn and help patients, you're not just going to learn it in 15 minutes.
No, you've got to commit. That's right. Through a webinar or a presentation, no, very definitely. Finally, Carolyn, and you've done amazingly well, what message of hope and resilience would you like to leave with our listeners who are navigating their own chronic illness?
I think we should never underestimate the role of love and kindness, you know. I feel very lucky with the support that I have and that I've been able to express how I'm feeling to my family and be validated, and that my family and friends make allowances to include me. I think if you can just get some people who understand you, if you take the time to ask what you need so that you can experience joy. I've had to change what I want to do in retirement, but we all need to find ways to feed our soul with joy. And I hope that other people can have a support network that helps them achieve what that helps them do what has to be done so they can get out and do that.
Live their best lives. Huh?
Yeah. I mean, I've managed to have a great holiday last year, which I was so happy. I sort of worked out the things that I need to do to be able to do that. And my husband's really happy just to, you know, we just do things at a slower pace and in a slightly different way, but we still can enjoy things. And that gave me so much hope and I know that there are things I can do. It may not be the overseas trip to noisy, crowded Italy, but, you know, getting out into nature and feeding my soul is something that I really want to do. So, yeah. Support.
That is a really lovely message to leave with our listeners. I think you are incredibly blessed because you've got a husband and family that are supportive. And, of course, we do recognise that not all our listeners have got supportive families, and it is particularly isolating and challenging for them. But, look, Carolyn, your understanding has undoubtedly been influenced by the many years that you've been a clinician, and I really want to thank you for agreeing to be on our podcast today and just, you know, talking from your own experience of how you feel, what works, what doesn't. And I noticed right at the end there, you got a bit choked up when you were talking about just how you make all of this work and the people around you who help you and the support structures, which is so important. So thank you, Carolyn.
That's a pleasure.
My guest today. Today's podcast is part of our World ME Awareness Week series that Emerge Australia is recording with those living with ME/CFS. This is a platform where we can together explore the pressing issues faced by 250,000 people with ME/CFS and at least 400,000 more with long COVID in Australia. If the content of this or other Emerge Australia podcasts has triggered an emotional response for which you need assistance, feel free to contact Lifeline on 13114, their Crisis Support and Suicide Prevention Service. You may also go onto the Emerge Australia website where emergency services are listed. Tune in again for our next interview, and don't forget, for more information and to subscribe to the Emerge Australia newsletter, where you'll find lots of information about what we're doing and when we're doing it, visit our website on www.emerge.org.au. Carolyn, thank you so much again for coming in, and bye for now.
You may say that I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us, and the world will live as one.